guys. It's Wednesday. Lots to talk about. Precious Emor, Lag BaOmer. Yeah. Let's see.
So let's start with Parshas Emor and the list of Korbanos.
Okay. Source number one, Mashal Melech. Let's first read the Medrash, then you'll see why this Medrash is written here. Okay, Medrash isn't talking about Parshas Emor, so we think. It's going to be a big surprise. Big reveal, hold on. A lot of suspense. Have to wait for part two. Medrash talks about Kriyashma. Kriyashma, how does Kriyashma make its way into Parshas Emor? So you just have to wait. How does it make its way into Parshas Emor? Well, in Kriyashma, very interesting pasuk. And it's a pasuk that isn't just a message literarily, it has a lot of halachic ramifications. But to appreciate some of those ramifications, let's take a step back. Shmoneh Esrei is very formal. Can't be mafsik in Shmoneh Esrei. You have to stand during Shmoneh Esrei. That's what we're called the Amida. Gemara in Brachos says, "Afilu nachosh karach ala kevo." If you're davening Shmoneh Esrei, and a snake cozies up to you, keep davening Shmoneh Esrei. Okay, that may or may not be halachically, but shouldn't be mafsik. You can't walk around. You can't talk. You can't sit. It's really formal because you're standing in the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And of course you're formal. Of course you're not nonchalant, relaxed. Yeah, I'll just show up, talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu like I would, I don't know, my Rebbe or something. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this gravitas, there's solemnity, it's a really important moment. But Kriyashma is described a little bit different. Kriyashma is described as very, very chilled, chillaxed. Shachtecha v'kumecha, v'shiftecha v'veisecha, in fact, there's a story of a really important person who actually tried to create certain postures for Kriyashma. In the morning you should say it's standing, at the night you should say lying down, it's Beishamai and Shamai. Because I weren't happy. Tarfon tried to hold like Beishamai. Remember, Rachas isn't happy. It should be whatever you want. You want to stand, you want to sit, you want to lie down. Say Kriyashma wherever you want. So that's where the Medrash starts. The Medrash begins. You know what Parshas Emor is like and Kriyashma is like and it has to do with Parshas Emor, and we'll see. It's like a king who sends a decree out to his citizens and they all get the decree, they all get the piece of paper, they all get the memo. They start shaking. They're terrified. They all stand at attention. They all gather and the king says, no. That's not what I want. Mashal Melech, Sheshalach Prozdok Mashal Medina, Masu B'nei, oh, this is the king's missive. Let's stand, let's shake, let's shiver, let's tremble. The king says, no. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, that's not what I want. When you're reading my doctrine, what you believe in, belief, faith, love for me, relationship, covenant with me, Shema, just say it however you want. Prozdok Mashdidi, line number 3, Hashem says, I'm not like that king. Lahutrachti alechem, I didn't cause you inconvenience. Lo marti alechem shtei karm kriyashma, lo omdim, al raglechem, lo paris roshechem, I'm pulling your hair out, standing, fleeing, frightened in panic. How do you want to say it? Say it at home, say it on the road, say it in your bed, say it in your pajamas, say it when you're relaxed. What's this Medrash talking about? Well, what is Hashem telling us? How is Hashem's doctrine different from the king's message, the king's letter? What difference does it make whether they're in pajamas or... It's part of Avodas Hashem. And you have to hit it and balance it. You're right. On the one hand, there's part of Avodas Hashem that needs formality, that needs codes, that needs dress, that needs walking to some other place. If you aren't able to put your mind into some other place, away from your reality, and feel that religion is walking up a mountain, standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, feeling a bit unnerved, feeling a bit wobbly, your knees aren't wobbling when you're part of religion, either literally or figuratively, then all of religion just becomes flat. And Hashem's your friend, and Hashem loves you, and it's all a love fest, and what can I do for you? Okay, and you know what you lose? You lose a very important word for religion. It's called transcendence. Fancy word. I'll make it easier for you. It's an easier word, but you need to capitalize it. It's the word other with a capital O. That religion is not just about social justice, equality, light onto nations, traditions, culture, bagels, gefilte fish, and the state of Israel. It's about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the enormity of His will and the enormity of His expectations and the eternity of His process, and it's going someplace else. It's not your shul, it's not your home, and it's not your heart, and it's not your reality, it's something else. And today, there's a lot of deflated transcendence, a lot of religions being dragged down, because we've done a good job. We've done a good job since the Holocaust of making Hashem more friendly, because after the Holocaust, boy, was Hashem scary. And boy, was just a little dark. So two or three generations of the best rabbis in the world, I may know some of them, worked really, really hard to make religion friendly and easy and part of our world. And after all, keep Shabbos, because it's a good time to spend full day with your family in pajamas, relaxing, playing card games and board games, and because that's what the world needs. A softer, easier, less transcendent religion. Just be a good person. Love your neighbor like you're doing to others. Show respect to people. Act kindly. Where's the Kadosh Baruch Hu? Where's the Beis HaMikdash? Where's the Karban? Where's going somewhere else? Where's meeting an other? Where's leaving your world and going to another world? Part of what I like about Kabbalah, not being a Mekubal, not studying Kabbalah, it's about to be the day of Kabbalah, Rishon Bar Yochai, like Vomer, it just reminds you this is just a world. It's really big. And it feels huge. And if I say the world, I mean the planet Earth. I mean all the realities, we know it. Could you imagine if you took a spaceship, fusion energy, quantum leap, you could travel to the end of the universe as we know it, and then turn the knob, open the door, and go into another world. Because our world is just one room in this huge building that's striated with other rooms on top of it. And we spend most of our time, because we're scientific, and we're rationalists, and we're empiricists, and science has empowered us, and we can see the expanses of the universe. We see how big it is, and it feels so big, and we're humbled by it. We spend all of our time, most of our time, which is where we should be. That's where we are in history. But it can become a little bit religion too anchored to humanity rather than something beyond the human experience, eternity, enormity. And Kabbalah shatters. Kabbalah pulverizes that little prison that you have, this mental prison, this prison of imagination, that this is everything. Mindset isn't everything. This is what we have to invest in. We spend most of our time investing in. And that's being lost in our world. That transcendence is under fire. Think about it. What is religion for you? How much of religion is the part that coheres and overlaps with being a good human being? How much of religion is something beyond just the abilities of humans to reach the perfect society and family and community and confidence and responsibility and dignity and everything? It's something only Hashem can give. It's called revelation. It's called eternity. It's called the will of Hashem. And to get to that place, it has to be stepping outside yourself and stepping outside your mind and stepping outside your routine. And you know what? At some point, guys, even though we lived in a very, very relaxed and chilled world, and we don't pay so much attention to the codes and to the dress and to the differences, and we just want to feel real and authentic, at some point you gotta account for it. At some point, if davening is going to mean stepping outside of yourself, then everything that you want to bring to davening and stepping outside your world, but you want to dress differently for davening. People who dress differently for davening have an easier time transcending. I dress one way at work and one way when I'm playing ball and one way when I daven, I dress a different way. And for some people, it's wearing a jacket. And for some people, which I would strongly encourage, I'm talking to you, I want to give you a gamut and create space for all different types of approaches, because it's really important, the kernel, the spirit, not the manifestation. For one person, it's wearing a hat during davening. So for you, you're not trained to wear hats, and for us, hats would be a little bit out of place, but it's about showing up to davening in a dress that's appropriate, in clothing that's appropriate. What it really comes down to is the summer, not davening in shorts. Walking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in shorts. How much of a change is it for you? Now, that doesn't mean that if you're on a teol in the middle of a forest, you travel 32 miles, 60 kilometers to get a pair of pants. I've davened in shorts before also. But it just means that if more or less, another little effort, you put on a pair of pants because that's where you stand for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I've davened in shorts my time. That's Asur Min HaTorah. But you realize, or you know, you go on a teol, you take a pair of pants that I can daven properly. And if you can't, you can't. If you're in the army, you can't. The army have pants, not shorts, but army davening in uniforms. But don't look across at, let's say, Haredim, who are super uniformed and super coded. No, they got it all wrong. No, they got it right. Uniforms do create identity. And they create identity for special moments. They create identity for maybe non-special moments. The entire life, I'm dressed in a uniform. I'm dressing in a white shirt. I do a video, but whatever. But if you're dressed in a white shirt like I don't, one of normal times, you have a clear demarcation. What world do I belong to? What world do I not belong to? And codes, and dress codes, and hair codes. And there's a lot to be said about those codes. A lot to be said about them. And don't trivialize them. And even though we don't live in a super coded environment, there are moments that codes are important to you. What dress is appropriate? What? Shabbos. Super important Shabbos. I don't know when and how Shabbos dress started to disintegrate. But that's at the core of Shabbos. This isn't a minhag to get dressed for Shabbos. Kavod Shabbos is expressed by clothing. And again, I don't want to get too nitty-gritty on the details because clothing is very, very subjective. But we'd all agree that at a certain point, you've passed the boundary of subjective clothing and you're not really dressing for Shabbos anymore. And each person think about that. And think about its value, not just to honor Shabbos, but when you leave yeshiva, and I know you guys have just come, when you leave yeshiva, oh my goodness, the Shabbos become important. You can't underestimate the value of Shabbos. It's a once in 7 days reset because your 6 days, you are so busy. And school, and work, and profession. And it's just, if you don't take Shabbos seriously, it's a free fall. The weeks become months, and the months become years, and you wake up 4 years later, 5 years later out of yeshiva, and who am I? What did I become? Shabbos is okay. Things are settling down now, and you got to plan. I'm talking to the boys who are leaving now. You really have to be very deliberate and plan. What do I hope to accomplish this Shabbos? Don't be neurotic. Shabbos is for rest. Shabbos is for relaxation. But what do I hope to accomplish for Shabbos? And how am I going to accomplish it? What dosage of davening? What dosage of learning? What dosage of friendship? And why? I can't just fall into Shabbos. And it's a little bit strange because in yeshiva, Shabbos is just the recovery period. Shabbos, you just want to chill and veg and gain your sleep and food. But you can't do that. You don't have that luxury. You really have to be a little different. Doesn't have to only be learning, but you got to say, Shabbos is beginning. 24 hours later, what happened to me over Shabbos? Like, what did I experience? How did I reset myself spiritually? If not, it's really a spiral. It's a really quick spiral. And in the army, the same thing, by the way. Guys, they're both in the army. We have to show them soon enough. So that's one part of religion. It's really important. There's all other parts of religion. And that part says that if it's too formal and too transcendent and too coded and too much stepping outside yourself, you know what it becomes? It becomes dissonant. And dissonance is the great enemy of religious authenticity. Because dissonance is called bipolarism. And bipolarism is really, really exciting religiously because it allows you to be two people. You shake and you shuckle and you learn and you pay homage and lip service, but you know, I don't really get it. There's that other you that you are really, really protecting. No one's getting to that real me. Yeah, I'll go and I'll give and I'll learn. I'm a good boy, listen. But the me, that me is fortress. I got a great wall of me around, a great wall of China. No one's getting past that wall. You know, imagine our line. No one's getting into me. I'm not getting into me. Because that me, I just want to protect it. And all the formal exercises, yeah, they're easy to engage in because they're not really me. And they don't become authentic and very distant. And it's just, you know, I'm play acting and I'm play dancing and I'm going through the motions, but when it all stops and the music stops, I'm in my room and it's at night, or I'm no longer in yeshiva and I have my knee and I have a family. I just, you know, the real me comes out. That's not so religious. And that was the me that went through the motions of the play acted and put on had a certain clothing and acted and looked a certain way. And when I'm not with the clothing, I'm not in the base of medrash, even when I'm authentic, even if it's not a complete loss. But you know, when I'm in the base of medrash and shul, I'm 30 years old, I'm in that, it's called in Hebrew shvung, in that routine. I know where I am. We all know the routine we fall to. Walk into shul, walk into the front of the rabbi, the religious part, then, you know, that's just a side part of my life. Not only is it not authentic, it's not holistic. It doesn't wrap itself around the totality. Because ultimately, frumkeit is not about codes, and not about clothing, and not about, it's about no matter where you are, you stand in the presence of Hashem, and that standing in the presence of Hashem is just different. In the base matter, it's expressed through learning, it's in shul, it's in chesed, and language, and thought, and behavior, and just everything. And that's how Kriya Shema and Shemona Esrei are trying to play off of each other. Shemona Esrei accentuates the formal part. Stand at attention. Don't toil. Don't move. Statue. Don't go anywhere. Snakes, serpents, scorpions. Nothing. And Kriya Shema is a little more natural. And that's why it's a little bit more elastic. It's going to happen on the road, during the trip. You're not going to daven. Obviously, daven when you're making a trip. This is figuratively when you're making trips and traveling places. You're feeling HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mekabe Malchus Shemayim, Shemayim Zol Shel Elokeinu Shemayim Chai. Then I stop, get into my zone, meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu, daven Shemona Esrei, and then go back. And you really have to find ways in life to carve space for both of those. I remember about 20 years ago, I was tasked with writing a handbook for behavior in the Beis Medrash. I forget who tasked me. I don't know if that book still exists. You can probably find it in some old moldy carton somewhere in the bottom of the bomb shelter, you know, near the Mivoah. But I sat there and thought about how I would phrase it. And I was trying to oscillate between these two, because the Beis Medrash is too formal, too sacred, and too hallowed. Like, you're not going to feel comfortable being there that long, and whatever happens there isn't going to spill over or bleed over to your regular life. So you have to make yourself comfortable in base matters. On the other hand, if the base matters is just free-for-all, and it's just like your room, and everything goes, and there's no code, so you're not really learning Torah. It's not a pious moment. It's an academic moment. Torah has to be pious. How can Torah be pious? How can Torah be searching for Hashem's word? And I don't really remember what I wrote, but I'm being really torn. I'm torn, not in a conflicted way. Trying to create balance. Right? So I don't really get so upset, personally, when I see guys walking around without their shoes on. My nose gets upset. But I don't get upset. See, walking around without shoes. I know it's like a way of making yourself comfortable, taking a drink, or relaxing. But where's the line? Where's the line in the basement? It's just a line too far. So, for example, to me, I would say that line is, Beis Medrash should be a place for a holy text. It should be a place to read non-holy texts. Again, you glance at it, retake a quick look, but it should be a place where, okay, now I'm putting down my Gemara and picking up my Plato. I'm picking up my Shakespeare and read it. Again, you want to look at something, a headline, your phone. Again, I think we're slowly but surely heading for banning phones, you know, in public spaces. I don't mean we, meaning we're having a meeting tomorrow to punish you. I'm just saying our world. I think our world's going to wake up to this craziness and say, for people to concentrate, we just need to put the phones aside. We're going to reach that at a certain point. I don't mean Yeshiva Alexander. I mean, that's my prophecy. I think it's going to be a prophecy at some point. But that's where we're heading. But I'm saying, now that we have phones in the basement, I'm just looking at the headlines and looking at, but to sit there and say, now I'm taking a non-from text or a non-Torah text and reading it, no. No, that'd be nice to probably. Music in the basement. There's not having music to listen to. A lot of people like to listen to music that calms them down. So first of all, unrelated to tonight's share, as I told you, we try to get past one source. I don't know if we'll be successful. Unrelated to tonight's share, it's really, really important to you for your success in life to learn to concentrate without music in the background. I know it sounds like Armageddon. I know it sounds like the impossible Mount Everest thing. It will never happen, Rabbi. You don't understand. It calms me down. It makes me... It's all true. One thing I can tell you. I'm not a physicist. I'm not a biologist. I'm not a neuro. I can promise you that you're still dividing your resources. As much as it's background, it's still drawing. It's still juggling. It's still two things at once. And there's a level of concentration and focus that you can't reach with using the background. And sometimes you need it. And when you have that focus in life, you'll go far. Trust me. When you get that promotion at age 35, the boss says, wow, you're living in a bunch of non-focused people. You're the best focuser on the team. You're now the CEO. You'll write me an email. Thank you, retiring. I heard it from you. Maybe send along a little from San Angelo, a nice little check or something. I promise you, oh yeah, he was right. I got the promotion. All these other guys can't think beyond their nose. Too busy YouTube. Here I am, 12 hours. I'm just sitting there and thinking. Wow, that's strange. Where did I learn that? Oh, retirement. Good thing I listened to this advice. Maybe I should listen to all of this advice. Everything. Promise you. Okay, but you need music sometimes. But what music do you listen to? What, is it appropriate? Is it not? That's what the first part of this matter talks about. Instead of saying, don't just formalize religion. Because if you formalize it, you ossify it, you dry it up, you put it on a mausoleum, put it behind the showcase, you make it trip. And then it's easier to be bifurcated, it's easier to be inauthentic, it's easier to be coded, it's easier to be two-used. On the other hand, if it's real and genuine, and there's no distance, and there's no dissonance, and it's easy for it to be flat, it's easy for it to be shallow, it's easy for it to be just... And you have to work hard at building those two modes. Davening is unique, davening is special. Can you walk up? Can you rise up to a different place in davening? Can you have that sense of gravitas, of eternity, of winning Hashem's Torah? Obviously, it's easier in davening because davening is sporadic. Learning in yeshiva is a whole day. It's a little harder to feel that. But one day, when you're not learning a whole day as you are in yeshiva, that learning is going to have to carry over. Now is my time for learning. Now I'm going to sit there. And I think a lot of people find that saying the bracha, Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana, when you're in yeshiva, doesn't carry as much potency because you're in the whole time not walking into the base manager, not leaving the base managers, very little kinesa and yitzia because you're there the whole day, Baruch Hashem. But when you're no longer in yeshiva, maybe sit down when you start to learn and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let my learning be correct. And no one can, not there's anyone around you to catch you, but and the tefillah that you say, but can you still be yitzia? Maybe more important. Okay, so that's the first part of the matter. What in the heck does this have to do with Parshas Emor? Parshas Emor, this should be in Parshas Beschadon, Kriya Shema. Why is it listed in Emor? You have to read the second part of the Medrash. Second part of the Medrash is, well, something similar. Someone else. The Medrash now quotes Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shimon. Simon. The Medrash is called Simon, Shimon. This is about Emor, so the Medrash juxtaposes two parallel themed messages. A little bit different, this message. Rabbi Yehuda was reading Parshas Emor. And when he was reading Parshas Emor, he noted there are 10 animals you can eat. 10 kosher animals. I'm not talking about the grasshoppers. I'm talking about the real animals. Red meat. Hamburgers. Big hamburgers. And 10 types of animals. And 7 of those are domesticated. What are the domesticated? The goats, the sheep, the ram, the cow, the ox. 3 of them are, you know, the fancy meats you've read about in these restaurants, the crazy restaurants. Let's get some bison meat. Let's get some venison. Yeah, okay, it's all great. It's fancy. I don't know. Maybe it's a simple Jew from Brooklyn. I'm happy with a hamburger. I'm happy with a French fry. I don't need the venison. I don't need the fancy stuff. I'm pretty happy. Give me a hamburger. It's all good. All right? Good piece of flesh. It all works for me. Now, why are the domesticated ones the dominant? Why are we basically eating domesticated animals? So Hashem says, Asara mina behemos masarti lecha. I gave you 10 animals to eat. Shlosha b'shuscha. I'm sorry, the opposite way. Excuse me. 3 b'shuscha, zayinei b'shuscha. But you, even though numerically most of the animals that are on the roster are not domesticated, but we end up eating the domesticated ones. What are the ones that are not domesticated? Look at the third line from the bottom. Tzvi, Yachmar, Akko, Dishon, Ta'o, Zemer. I don't even know what the most of those are. We eat cow. We eat goat. We eat sheep. We don't sit there eating strange animals. Why? Lo hitrachti alechem v'lo amarti alechem liyityageh b'harim. When you bring a carbon for me, not just when you eat, when you bring a carbon, you can only bring domesticated animals. You can't bring a deer as a carbon. You can't bring a buffalo as a carbon. You have to bring domesticated animals. Shem says, when you bring a carbon, don't think you have to go to the mountains, hunting missions, travel the seas, inconvenience yourself, work hard. You know what? Go into your backyard, grab a cow, come to the Beis HaMikdash. Go into your backyard, grab a sheep, go catch a pigeon, come to the Beis HaMikdash. Come to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, what is this message? I mean, after all, it's counterintuitive. If I ask you, let your imagination run free, what would be the greatest carbon you could ever imagine bringing to Hashem? Free your mind. What would show your devotion to Hashem? I'm thinking it's a toss-up. Grizzly bear, Manchurian tiger. Could you imagine a howling grizzly bear, claws slicing through the air, chained up? I mean, this is drama. And I hold a bear on top of his back, I slit its throat, the red blood comes streaming down through its fur. It's screaming its last breath, and I say, "Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm in. Right? Look what I've done. This is a gift, right? You like me, right?" The other guy got the Manchurian tiger. Maybe it doesn't have the same claw effect, but they're harder to find. So he gets points, you know, for effort. I mean, it's scary. Okay, you know what? Some of you are more nautical. You're beach people. Any Sydney boys here? The Sydney boys. Okay, so what you would do is, you would get on a hauler, there's some Japanese hauler, and you'd chase a humpback whale. You'd name yourself Moby Dick. Moby Dick of the 21st century. 22nd. Yeah, you'd be chasing across the oceans, day after night. You'd write poetry. You'd be famous. And then you'd carry that humpback whale. The humpback whale, pretty big. And you'd lug it from the port in Ashdod, all the way to Yerushalayim. Could you imagine how many slaves it would take you in ancient times? And could you just imagine slicing the belly of the humpback whale on the Mizbeach and watching all that blubber? I mean, this is drama. And you know what we do bring to Hashem? A goat, a sheep, a cow. Talk about anticlimactic, talk about boring korbanos. And you bring the same sheep that I bring, and I bring the same ox that you bring, and it's like, oh my goodness, shoot me now, another ox, another goat, another sheep. It's getting pretty boring. Like, where's the color? Where's the drama? This is the Beis HaMikdash. This is tribute time. Shouldn't it be a safari? So Hashem is telling you no. And you know why no? For three reasons. One reason we talked about, two other reasons which are derivatives. One reason why I said before, I don't want you to feel that it takes too much effort, and a little bit related to what I said, but not really what I said before. Sometimes people are afraid to excel at religion because it just seems like it's so hard. How will I ever get there? You walk into the Gush Beis Medrash, and you feel like a paramecium. Like, wasn't I the top boy in high school? Didn't I once score 100 some grades? Like, I used to feel good about myself. I used to think like I knew things. And then Gush happened. And I became an amoeba. And how did that happen so quickly? And I'll never be like that person. Because I'm just like a nothing. And Hashem says, no. It's in your own backyard. Borrowing from a pasuk in Parshas Nitzavim, source number 2, Ki ha-mitzvah zos asher anochi mitzavcha yom, lo niflei simcha, lo rechoka, lo bashamayim, lo me'ever le'yam. The Medrash in Mishle, boys who are in my shiur and Elo, may remember this Medrash, and may remember a three-word phrase associated with this Medrash. We say, Yonah, who else is in my shiur? Only Yonah. See if you remember it. Two people walk into a vaulted ceiling room, and they see a piece of bread hanging from the ceiling. Moshe, and two, one, the folly, the silly person said, that's too high, I'll never get that bread. And what's the three-word phrase that the wise man says?
Someone hung it.
Someone hung it. Keep telling yourself that in life. Someone hung it. If someone hung it, there's a way. And it's not just about Torah learning. It's about religious excellence. Don't be scared. If you succeeded before in life, you'll succeed here. I don't just mean here in yeshiva. It's easy to succeed knowing this year. That you'll get to. And existentially, identity. Because like you see people are really accomplishing religion. Now, you're just shifting. Because it's not really the big I that you need. It's the big E. The big I is intellect. And until now, a lot of you have gotten by on your intellect. Because it's really not existential. It's getting good marks and cashing in on your good marks. Welcome to the real world, guys. It doesn't count. Intellect really won't get you places in life. It may pad your wallet, sometimes jobs, but it doesn't really get you relationships, doesn't get you meaning, doesn't get you morals, doesn't get you experience. That's oftentimes the two E's, effort and emotional intelligence. It's effort, it's effort. It's really how much effort, how much emotions you invested in. So when I say have confidence, I don't just mean say, well, I was a smart guy in high school. I did trig. I did calculus. I can crack shots. I trust in myself. I'm betting on myself. If I take this seriously, I'm going to work hard. And when I wake up 20 years from now, I will be a serious Jew. I will be a serious Oved Hashem. You have to put in the effort. I've been around this circuit a long time. I've been in the base medrash world a long time. I've seen a lot of flameouts. More than my share, more than I like to think about. Guys who are bright, brighter than the next, brighter than me, brighter than him. Sizzle, dazzle, impressed everyone. In this room, I saw people shrug up Reb Lichtenstein. They got on the door. Like, I didn't even ask a question. I always said, stay, ask a question, let alone catch Reb Lichtenstein. You know, they came and they went, flash in the pan, smart little. You know what really accomplishes? Steady Eddie's people at work, day in, day out, that care about it, that anchor it to their identity. Trust me, those are the people that reach the finish line. Not the bright guys, not that there's anything wrong with being bright. You can be bright and have effort and emotional investment also, but the brightness doesn't get you anywhere in learning and certainly in religious meaning and identity. So Hashem says have confidence. Don't think it's something beyond your reach. But there's a second message. A lot of times, it's not just a confidence index. Can I really do it? I'm just saying, don't worry, it's in your backyard. There's another message about the backyard effect. The backyard effect, Hashem is saying, a lot of times, people think about religion, and they say, I got to become someone else. And I got to go somewhere else. Because the me, that's too common. That's not religion. Religion is change. Identity revolution. So it's not like, come on, I grew up in Sydney. I didn't, but you did. That's not a place to be religious, right? Bondi Beach. It's like one step from Stone and I'm like, I can't be religious there. And the me that grew up there, of course, can't be religious. I have to reformat the me. Got to make a whole new me. I got to change my dress. I got to change my identity. I have to change my ideology. I have to go somewhere to find something else. Because the past is too corrupt and the past is too tainted. Or the past is just too common. Even if it's not tainted, it's just too humdrum. Like religion is ecstasy and excitement and difference and spiritual highs, and I have to go to a jungle. That's where religion. I have to go hunting down a buffalo. I have to go hunting down a lion. I have to go on a safari. I have to go somewhere else to be religious. And Hashem says, no, just look under your own 2 feet. Your world. Improve it. Stay within it. Excel at it. Do whatever you've been doing until now, but just do it better or different and frame it as a bonus Hashem. I'm sure all you guys are trying your hardest to be good kids to your parents. Not everyone succeeds. It's a hard mitzvah these days. It's even harder when you get it. It's a hard mitzvah. But now do it because it's a mitzvah, not just because of your gratitude and your love to your parents, because it's a mitzvah. Well, it's all about the framing. You're all in this yeshiva because you've been successful until now, but how much of that success has been directly a product of religion? I want to be an Ovad Hashem, therefore I'm going to do well in school, I'm going to be kind. It's just you fell into it, that we've created an easy world. It's easy to be from today. Food is there, no problem with kashrus, no problem with Shabbos. Like, when's the last time you struggled for religion? When's the time religion actually made us real? I really worked hard for it, which in many ways is great. I call it the emulsification of religion. Everything's just so easy today. When's the last time you struggled for kosher food? Your grandparents struggled for kosher food. So the boys here where's our Durban? Our Durban rep, right? You always have food whenever you want, right? You got to think about it from time to time. So talk to some of the guys from Teaneck who just wake up, roll out of bed, and roll to three different pizza shops two blocks away, kosher pizza shops. It's a struggle. But it's not going somewhere else. And that's what Hashem is telling. Don't think. Listen to the Medrash again. Hashem says, Lo itrachti alechem, line number two from the bottom. Lo amarti alechem lisyagea beharim. It's not just that it's not something that you have to work incredibly hard, you'll never reach it. But Hashem is also telling you, don't think you have to go to a jungle. You don't have to go to a mountain. You don't have to travel the seas. You don't have to go to an ocean. You don't have to go somewhere exotic. You don't have to go somewhere different. Everything you need to be an Oved Hashem, right in your backyard, right in your world. Where Hashem place you? A lot of it has to do with placement. A lot of people your age, when they start to become very, very serious about religion, they look back at the world that they come from. And in many people's minds, it's less religious than they think it should be. Their community, their ideology, some people call it modern orthodoxy, B'nai Akiva, different labels, different communities, whatever. I'm not into labels, but you look back at your home community that raised you. And many people feel it's time to move, time to go somewhere else where I can be, in my mind, more from. It's a legitimate choice, as long as it isn't snobbery and smug and deprecating or derisive of other people. Shame, you got to build your life. Anyone here feels that? Be my guest. I'd be the happiest person in the world. I don't get paid based on ideological success. I get paid based on religious. I don't get paid for anything. I'm going to get you to be in Olam Haba. Olam Haba, many, many seats, many sections. I'd be thrilled. I could care less, really. Other people say, that's what your decision is. Well, if Hashem placed me in this world, in this family, in this community, in this society, maybe he doesn't want me to leave it. Maybe he wants me to try to change it. And that's an ongoing conversation. And I would probably think to myself that if you don't have that conversation with yourself at some point, you're not really facing religious growth. Because religious growth more often than not means I want to find a level of religiosity that my home community doesn't provide. My home community doesn't provide it. And doesn't have to be all or nothing. I've had long conversations with friends of mine who stayed in Chutz La'aretz who felt, and I mean in no way, shape, or form, any insult to any of the great high schools that are represented here. I'm not even say the name. Oh, I went to... And I went to, and I graduated from, and right there again, and we try to get, so I had all these high schools, these modern Orthodox high schools. I don't feel like they're enough for my kid. And they sent their kids to a more yeshivish place. Cost, for sure. And I had conversations, and I said, I can easily see that decision. It depends upon the community, depends upon the family, depends upon the boy or girl in question. So girls are different from boys. There's a range of different factors. But I remember one of the reasons I made Aliyah when I made Aliyah is because I saw myself facing that predicament as a father. When I was a young boy your age, thinking about marriage, thinking about raising a family, I said, I don't really know which school in North America I would be comfortable sending my children to. And I felt that just were more options here in Eretz Yisrael. Well, the narrative in this world that I would join, there'd be more options. Whatever. That's a conversation that has a million different answers to it. But it's almost as if you never had the conversation, that you're just not allowing yourself to think freely and honestly. We all fashion ourselves as free thinkers, open-minded, courageous thinkers. Yeah, until it comes time to define ourselves and face challenges in ourselves and leave our own comfort zone, then we tend to shrivel up a little bit. Then we tend to pull the covers over our head and then fall back into what we're comfortable with, rather than making the same bold decisions, the same bold deliberations that we expected. Be bold, be open-minded. All those fill-in-the-blanks Jews, they're not open-minded. They're all closed. They're all, sometimes you can be closing your own open-mindedness as well. So, oh no, that's the sum total of, 7 o'clock. That's the sum total of the first Makor. Tell you what, let's skip to a little Lag B'Omer conversation. I really wanted to talk with you a little bit about Lag B'Omer. So we'll get back to some of the other Makor some other time. I don't mean about Lag B'Omer. What should we talk about Lag B'Omer? Okay. What should we talk about at Lag B'Omer? What would be good for you guys to talk about Lag B'Omer? Okay, let's talk a little bit about Rishim Bar Yochai. It's on the bottom of the backside, second side of the first page. Okay. Some of Rishim Bar Yochai's famous hits. So even if you're not a mystic, you still try to connect with Rishim Bar Yochai. The rational. I hope in addition we have nice campfires tomorrow night, nice singing. Bring your instruments. Shirin Bar Yochai said in the Gemara in Brachos, Tanya, Shirin Bar Yochai Omer, Shalosh Matanos Tavos, Nasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu LiYisrael. Three of the greatest gifts Hashem gave us. Afterlife. Torah. Eretz Yisrael. You can't beat that. But they all share one common denominator. Starts with S. Ends with Agol. It's called struggle. Hebrew is called Yisurim. They all demand struggle, hard work. They don't come easy. How does Judaism define happiness? Classic happiness, being at peace with yourself, having everything you need, having calm, serenity. Sometimes a life of struggle creates happiness. Because you're very keenly aware of values larger than yourself. And by definition, values larger than yourself are going to take a struggle. There are two ways to read this Gemara, and they're both correct. One way to read the Gemara is that Hashem creates Yisurim, and I don't even think we're at the level right now, most of us, to even appreciate how long the tradition for us of called Yisurim Shalafa is. And when someone suffers tragedy, when someone suffers real misfortune and real suffering, Hashem wants us to accept it as Yisurim Shalava. Do you even know what that means, Yisurim Shalava? Well, we don't know what it means, in fact, Baruch Hashem, because, thank God, many of us are not exposed to Yisurim. And even those that are, what does it mean that Hashem loves you so much that He gives you Yisurim? Does that mean that now you have more share in Olam Haba? That's an easy trade. That's an easy explanation. Does it mean that you grow in ways that you wouldn't have been able to grow beforehand? I don't think anyone here suffered so titanically during Corona, but take a minute, take a few seconds and think about how you suffered, what you lost. What you lost in your life that you wanted to have. That's an easy one. It's not suffering, but it's loss. It's not major, but you all had loss. Was it a growth for you? Were you able to appreciate things more? Learn about yourself? Not take things for granted. Appreciate things more. Appreciate people more. Learn the difference between core values and artificial values, social, cultural values that maybe are shed off or aren't as necessary as we thought they used to be. So one way to read this Gemara is Yisurim. And it's real tragedy. The world is suffering a tragedy. And as I told you guys last week, it's still suffering a tragedy. So an interesting tweet today, which I thought was, you know, it's cute, obviously, the whole Twitter world is impersonal, but someone tweeted, I'm not a fan of tweeting vaccinations unless you really feel like your followers need to be vaccinated. If you're going to encourage people to vaccinate, then of course you should take every measure possible. But I'm just not a, I feel, for whatever reason, I But whatever, someone tweeted, I got vaccinated, I got my second dose today, feeling really happy, feeling really free. And the second part of their line was still feeling bad for the people in India who are dying, you know, 200,000 per day, 300,000 per day, whatever. Is that how many deaths there are per day, or that's how many infections, I mean, whatever, the numbers are bloated, either way you slice it. A lot of suffering that this world's still going to go through, and that's without even knowing how the boomerang effects of COVID, economically, socially, politically, who knows? The world is jello, big, big jello, and everything is jello. You know, the jello is happening, has to feel pretty solid right now because we're all vaccinated, but it's still jello world. But this Gemara also means that Torah and Eretz Yisrael and Olam Haba are only achieved through Yisrin because they're larger than life. You know what's not achieved through Yisrin? This cell phone. Because this cell phone is nothing. It's just an object, and it comes and it goes. And I get enough money, and I go and I buy it, and there's no Yisrin. It shouldn't be Yisrin. Hope none of you guys are sleeping outside the Apple factory. Oh, I want to get my Apple phone with Yisrin. That would be silly. This cup of tea, not much Yisrin involved. But when there are experiences, there are grabs, there are scores that are larger. You know why Torah comes with Yisrin? What's the Yisrin of Torah, guys? Come on. What's the Yisrin of Torah? It's not the classic word Yisrin. It means that it is really, really hard to learn Torah. It's hard intellectually. But you know what's even harder to learn Torah? It's harder to learn Torah emotionally. Why is it hard to learn Torah emotionally? Because you're always facing your own ignorance. It's really hard to do things when you know you're not going to be successful immediately. You want to be a better soccer player. You practice a few days and you get good. And that provides the motivation for more practice and more investment. You want to get good in Torah, you need about 7 years. I hate to break it to you. About 7 years. You need to expand. You want to be a Talmud Chacham, it's a 7-year process minimum. As much as I can quantify it. It's hard. Different people, different arcs, different backgrounds. You only got to spend 7 years seriously, seriously invested in learning to be a serious Talmud Chacham. Good news is today that in some cases it's pretty available even to people who aren't just remaining sequestered in the yeshiva. But you really got to spend time in it. But it's more than just facing your own ignorance. It's also the recognition that you're chayav to learn Torah every minute of your life that isn't accounted for. And that is an axiomatic statement. There is no way to argue with that statement. A male Jew is chayav to learn Torah every minute that isn't accounted for. There is no qualifier to that statement. Now the difference is, how do you define accounted for? But no matter how you define accounted for, that's a pretty hard sentence to live with. We'd like to think that we live free lives and we choose what to do with our time. A la carte, bring me the menu, I'll decide what to do. It's not really true. The Rambam writes, Chayiv Adam Lumatar Kafi Kocho. That's the definition of time is unaccounted for, B'chol Kocho. And that's a bummer. That's hard. It's not a bummer. It's great, but it's hard to wear that yoke on your neck to know that I always have to be learning Torah unless I'm accounting for my time in some other productive way. Let's take this conversation out of the Talmud Torah context. You have to live a productive life. Life isn't just I do what I want and then I decide when to clock in with religious duties. No. I lead a life whose every resource within reason is dedicated towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu and productivity. Written large or written small. How do you define that? Some say it's productivity and Torah is the only way to be productive. Some say there are other ways. But I don't just veg out. I don't just walk away from it. I don't just take these large blocks of... That's not Yisrin tragedy. That's not Yisrin... Eretz Yisrael's nickname is Bisrin. You know why? Because it's Hashem's land. And you know who knows it's Hashem's land? Better than your B'nai Akiva leader? All the Arabs who don't want us here. Now, it doesn't mean if you interview your Arabic BDS opponent of Israel, they would say, I know this is Hashem's land, and I know this is where history began, I know this is where history will end, and that's why I can't let the Jews be there. It's subconscious. We believe in metaphysical forces that drive human experience that can't be traced by psychology, sociology, statistics, and interviews. And I'll talk about this a little bit in Mirtz Hashem next week when we talk about Yom Yerushalayim. Important shiur, don't miss it, about Yom Yerushalayim. So only in 67, the equation changed. In 48, everyone was happy for the Jews to be in Israel. Sliced up salami, live in Tel Aviv, live in Petah Tikva, but don't live in the West Bank, or don't live in Yerushalayim. And He's easing our conscience from the Holocaust, all these refugee Jews, no one really wants them. 67 is a whole different kettle of fish, a whole different Jews in Jerusalem. The world is waking up. History is lurching forward. The end is here. It started. This is happening. You're either for it or against it. No neutral, no vanilla here. You're either for it, or you could be wildly for it, Christian fundamentalist, you could be wildly against it. But this is not a neutral event. This is a major, major event. So you want to live, just because I want to ruffle your feathers, guys. You want to live in Cape Town? It's easy. Not so easy, but it's easy-ish. Get a job, get an apartment, Sea Point, on the beach, pretty nice. I was trying to tempt some of these Americans to visit you guys one day. Really nice views. Go up to actually Table Mountain, just burnt down. Go up to Table Mountain. It's going to give it a few years to recover. Incredible views. You guys think your mountains are. You got to see some of these mountains. You haven't seen it. Really nice, but no one's contesting it. Now, that's not only in the land of history, the land of Hashem, the land of the others. It's a land. It's a place. It's a city. There are malls. There are cars. Ice cream shops. It's great. This isn't a land. This is the land of Hashem. That's a heavy weight to carry. Some of this is going to be too heavy. I remember once when I made Aliyah, I went back to America. I met one of my rebbeim who was much more of a yeshivish orientation. And I said to him, like, when's the last time you were in Israel? It had been a long time. I don't know when the last time I was in Israel. It was about 25 years ago. But I hadn't been there for a while. I said, come to Israel. I'll show you around. I'll show you the gush. I'll take some time off. Like, I was very close with him. And he looked at me and said something really interesting, but it cuts both ways. He said, I don't think I could go to Israel like that as a tourist with my camera, spending any time here, a day here. Like, to me, it's Eretz HaKodesh. It's Eretz HaAvos. It's holy. It's sacred. I don't just pop in and pop out. And I remember walking away from that conversation in the immediate sense. I said, wow, I don't have that feeling in Israel. I wish I did. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein used to say Tehillim every time he landed in Israel. Every time he landed, he said Tehillim, because we all know, like, if you'd be traveling from Ethiopia by foot, you'd say Tehillim when you land in Israel. If you'd be escaping Hitler, you'd say Tehillim. So why is it any different? It's just historical context is different. So he said Tehillim every time he landed. I kissed the tarmac, he'd say Tehillim. We didn't really land on the tarmac anymore. It'd be like kissing the terminal carpet, which is not hygienic. So don't start kissing terminal carpets, especially during COVID time. But on the other hand, like a couple hours later, I said, yeah, but look at the price he pays. He hasn't been in Israel 20 years. And to me, Eretz Yisrael is a little bit of each. I used to have this joke, which is really a dated joke, but it's a really cute line. Someone has to be like, what was the most important part of your yeshiva experience that allowed you to make Aliyah? Like, what? Tell me, what did you do in yeshiva that assured that you came back to Israel? I said, you know what really helped me come back to Israel? When I was in yeshiva, I saw movies. In those days, seeing a movie was an event. We didn't have... We went to a movie theater. Now, that seems odd. You became a Rebbe in Gush and made Aliyah because you saw movies when you were in Gush. No, I saw like 3-4 movies. I can even remember the movies in 1984 that I saw. 3-4 times I went with my friends to a movie theater on Matzah Shabbos. But I had some friends who came to their yeshiva as a, this is an electric experience. It's going to be magical in my year. I'm not seeing movies. I'm not listening to sports. I'm pulling my tzitzis out as far as they can go down to the floor. I'm not talking to girls. It was an unrealistic year. An unrealistic year is don't bleed over into the rest of your world. Then you come back to life and you're seeing movies and you're pulling your tzitzis down to the floor. And on the one hand, this was an elevated experience for me. And I just tried to be as normal as I could also. So that I saw Israel as a normal place. And Alon Shvat helped me do that. And you'll see as you start to move into people's homes here, when you're just in a yeshiva in a building, it's like this mystical, magical, makom haTorah. And then you leave. And you go back to your life. But part of what you'll see here is being in people's tables, being in people's homes. Yeah, it's just, you know, people shopping for their groceries, paying their taxes, cleaning their garbage, doing their floors. I mean, it's a place to live, not just a place to think about. It has to be a little bit of both. It has to be Eretz Yisrael, but also Israel, a place that you can live and raise your family and carry out normal affairs of life. But it's a different place, of course. Of course, Olam Haba. The road to Olam Haba is Olam Hazeh. Life is hard. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was reminding us not just about those harsh moments when we teeter on the edge of reality and we suffer tragedy and misfortune. Mirza Hashem, none of you should know that in your lives, which are just beginning. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is also talking about day to day. It's not struggle. It's not tragedy. It's struggle. The word yisurin doesn't just mean tragedy and misfortune. It means struggle. Hard work, effort, setbacks, rather than just assuming happiness, easiness. Think about that carefully. A little bit of a shift. Some of our Australian friends, right? Life's pretty easy. Life's a beach. No worries. I think we want worries. Not anxiety, not agony, not angst, but worries are good. You're alive. You're working for something. You're not looking for peace. You're not looking for nirvana. You're not looking to relax. If you relax, you're dead. If you're struggling, you're alive. You're always churning for something. Always in dynamic movement. What can I achieve? I'm not satisfied. What have I done wrong? How can I achieve something more? Everything's in your grasp. May as well go to sleep. Okay, get some dinner, everyone.